computer. This is Data.
I'm an android. I'm
Rangers McBasketball.
I was processing all of the information.
Processing.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Rangers McBasketball.
Analytics was crap.
Does not compute.
Just because you got good stats doesn't mean you're a good team.
Welcome to the Taking Charge podcast. I am Tom Zayas. I'm joined by Tim, a.k.a. Krangis McBasketball. Hey, Tim, what did you think about that intro I just made for the show?
I love it. I think it does a good job of encapsulating what we're doing here today, and I love the beat drops, so good work on that one.
Appreciate it. For all of you that don't know, that is Lieutenant Data of Star Trek Next Generation. It might go over some people's heads, but Data, as an android, is the spirit animal of this podcast because we are diving deep into the analytics of the Los Angeles Lakers and sometimes the greater NBA. But this time we are recording from a Las Vegas hotel room with Laker Film Room lurking in the background, as we did for his last podcast. So, Tim, we're going to get right in. Some people may say that diving into the Summer League analytics is a fool's errand. What say you, sir?
I mean, it's certainly not the most valuable thing to look at if we're going to look at.
All right. That was a great podcast, everybody.
It's good to understand how we've played, just put some numbers to what we're seeing and just help contextualize what's going on, especially with such an up and down, unorganized-ish game relative to what we see in the regular season. So I think there's definitely some value to it, and it's a good way to check up and see how players are doing. So I guess we can start by looking at just the team stats. So today the Lakers lost to the Clippers in overtime. For the Laker team overall, we shot 6 for 40 on jump shots, which isn't fantastic. 3 for 18 in catch and shoot opportunities, 2 for 19 off the dribble. We were 14 for 19 in transition, which would be the fourth highest efficiency of the 20 Summer League teams so far. So that was pretty solid, and we saw a lot of good plays there, a lot of guys converting and getting out into transition, and that was really the better parts of the day for this Laker team. But when we were slowed down and stopped and had to do offense in the half court, we were 17 for 61, which would be 17th out of 20 teams in efficiency.
It's not great, Bob. I just want to quickly say that transition efficiency is directed to Lonzo's strengths. He outletted the ball really well tonight. He got Ingram in a lot of space. Wings are going to love playing with him. So for all the, you know, crap he's going to get, I think that's where he shines tonight. So carry on. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think he did a really good job of getting us into those good situations. We didn't do a great job shooting the ball, so getting in transition got us a lot more shots at the rim. We were 4 for 27 from 3 today. Lonzo was 1 for 9, and he's going to get a ton of crap for not having a great game, but that's 3 for 18 from the rest of the team, which isn't good. If we look at our shot breakdown today, we had 21 shots that were at the rim, either on drives, post-ups, or floaters, 13 mid-range, and 27 from three. And that 27 includes a couple like half-court heaves, and there were like two or three times where we took a shot with like 0.4 seconds left on the shot clock, and they weren't high-percentage looks. But that's a pretty good breakdown, I'd say. So the team took some decent shots. I'd like to see us get out and transition more and try to do a better job in the half-court offense. If we look at individual players, we could start with Brandon Ingram, who I think had the best day of any Laker. Liked how he played. He was 6 for 6 on drives, and he really did a really nice job getting separation and getting by guys. So that was fantastic. His jumper was a little off. He was 1 for 7 on the day, 1 for 2 in the post. But he did a pretty good job overall. A lot of the plays that the team did run, whether just like individual actions or set plays, were for him, and he really took advantage. That gave him that half step on his defender, and he capitalized. So I'm impressed with how he did. Next, we can talk about Lonzo, who, if you had to say one word to describe Lonzo's day, what would you say?
Off.
Yeah.
He was just off, man. Shooter's going to shoot, and they're going to be off. Curry is off. He seems to be off against the Lakers more often than not the last 2 years.
We'll see without the Steph Curry stopper Marcelo Huertas, but
Yeah, man, just off. Like, he was getting good shots. It wasn't like, and I was gonna say that we were watching him in pregame, and he was short. Like, most of his jumpers, I didn't really feel like he got in a rhythm even before the game. So
yeah,
it's hard to expect that to happen in a game too.
Yeah, and I think just the major takeaway for me isn't the 1-for-11 on jump shots. It's he wasn't, the shots he was missing weren't because of his shooting form. It wasn't because there were things about him that inhibited him from making those shots. He was just missing open ones. Like you said, he was short in warmups. I watched him at halftime, and he was like 1-for-9 on wing threes from what I watched. So he just wasn't on today. But I don't think it'll be a long-term issue. There were a couple interesting things, the way he was deployed. Like, I saw him using the post like 3 or 4 times today, which isn't really something we saw at UCLA. He took one shot all season from UCLA in the post. So this is something new for him. And I thought he did an okay job. There was maybe 1 or 2 times where they tried to run split cuts with him as the passer in the post, which is an interesting way to use him. But he did okay. He also took two mid-range jumpers today, which would be 25% of his season total at UCLA. So those were two noteworthy things I saw from him. Like you said earlier, I think the best thing that he did was get us out in transition. He had a couple of rebounds where he immediately turned, hit some nice outlet passes. Whenever he was the short outlet, he always had his head up, and he was getting guys in good situations to make plays and attack early. So I think that'll continue. I think his shooting will get better. He passed up a lot of shots, especially in the second half on drives. And he was finding open guys, but the passes weren't on target. So they just weren't good decisions. He probably should have put those shots up.
So one thing I kind of wanted to see from him today was, beyond the looking for a shot a little bit more, was when he doesn't get the ball in early transition, I want to see him leak up the court a little bit more and be that secondary, like, the guy who's going to get the ball to the guy who's going to score a layup. You know what I mean? Like, kind of leak up and make himself available. Because there's a few times where Ingram got the rebound or got the ball, and Lonzo was kind of like around Ingram or just kind of, you know, putzing up the court, not as kind of quick to get up the court as I'd like to see him do. But I thought he's still, you know, that's something he's going to be able to do every game. You know, it doesn't matter if your shot's on. You can always push up a tempo and get those balls out into outlets and free up space for your other guys.
Absolutely. If he's just going to jog up the court, that's a lot easier for the defense to be able to try to stop those guys running at the rim or spotting up from three. But if Lonzo can sprint down there and be another threat and force the defense to have to stretch out to the three-point line, that'll open up other things up for his teammates and get him some good high percentage shots as well.
Anything else from Lonzo? I kind of feel like people are going to beat him up, and, you know, he had a bad game, and I don't really know how much we can glean from that, from the data, other than he had a bad game.
Yeah, I don't really have much else to add. I think he'll be fine. I didn't see anything today that changes my overall perception of him. I just like to see him a little bit more aggressive. Those shots will fall. He did a good job passing today and got us out in transition. So I saw what I kind of expected to see from him. I was hoping he'd hit those shots. He got a couple rebounds, got some assists, but yeah. So bad day for him, but doesn't change my long-term perspective of him.
So let's move on to someone who was just as bad, if not worse than Lonzo Ball. Ivica Zubac did not have a great game today, although he only played 15 minutes, but... what does the data reflect for Zubac's performance tonight?
Yeah, he didn't do a ton today. He just watching him, he looked less mobile than his already not too mobile self from last season. He definitely wasn't active. It just was a non-factor, which isn't something that you want from a sophomore coming back. You want him to step up the way Ingram did today and really help carry the team, especially when we were struggling in the half court. He wasn't scoring, wasn't really doing anything else that positively impacted the game. Opponents were 3-for-4 against him when he was the primary defender, and I just didn't see much improvement from a mobility perspective from last year. So not a ton from Zoo. He said post-game that he puts this loss on him, which is debatable.
That's cute.
But he said he's going to come back tomorrow and really show out. So we'll look for a better effort from him, look for more involvement. There were a couple times I saw him not get a call, and he didn't seem too happy and kind of jogged slowly back up the court on defense. So I think we're looking for him to bounce back.
Yeah, same thing with Lonzo. Like, he had an off day. You know, you don't have to shoot 11 threes and miss 10 of them to have an off day, like, as a big. There were times last season where he really, really struggled as well and just didn't play very much. He was pretty bad on defense. Kind of seemed slow out there, tired, but this is the first time he's played in an organized game in a few months. So I'm not super worried about Zubats, even though he was not very good. But Thomas Bryant was pretty good, Tim.
Yeah.
What did you think about Thomas Bryant?
I loved it. I loved his play. He played really well offensively, defensively, and in between the plays after he'd do something well, or he'd get an offensive rebound, get called, or the defender would get called for fouling him before he could put the shot back up. He'd be like dribbling the ball really hard, yelling at the crowd, like,
he's 99th percentile of being fired up.
Yeah, his motor really showed. He was yelling, flexing, trying to get the fans involved when he was on the court, on the bench. So he really helped kind of keep the crowd in it at some points. The first quarter was electric, but then it kind of died down a little bit. And especially in the second half, the atmosphere wasn't nearly as good as it was at the beginning of the game. But I think Bryant and the stuff he was doing kind of helped get the crowd back in it at a couple points. So, like, without even talking about how he actually played, like, he had a positive impact in that way. If we're just looking at his on-court presence, he did a pretty good job defensively. He had a couple sweet blocks. There's one that he didn't just, like, hit it. He, like, grabbed it and threw it at the ground.
He was coming from behind to shoot a jump shooter.
Yep.
And he just, like, cup threw it down. Like, no, this is not happening.
Saved the ball from going out of bounds. Yes. Yeah, that was a nice play. He did a good job. He got his hands on a lot of balls. He took one jumper. It was a three, and he made it. He was 4 for 5 on the game overall shooting. So good offensively. If he can play consistently like that, I mean, it'll still be tough to find him minutes behind Lopez and Zubats, but I guess we should keep an eye on, and this is probably an overreaction, but see throughout the season if he's able to kind of close the gap on Zoo, which is hard to do if he's going to be playing in the G League a lot. And we talked about this earlier. At the game, we'd think we'd rather see him play like 30 minutes a game in the G League than like 5 a game in the NBA, just from a development standpoint. But if he can be a contributor, that would be such great value for where we drafted him and would be a very pleasant surprise.
Yeah, I thought the Lakers went to a few lineups with Kuzma, I think, or Ware, whatever you want to say, at the 5. And I think Bryant or Zoo needs to be at the 5 for like every moment of this summer league.
He should have been there for overtime. He didn't play
absolutely
all the time.
Yeah,
was a mistake.
And so I wanted to see a little bit more minutes for Bryant, but you know, he did really well. I think that's why we wanted to see more minutes from him. I kind of want to ask you about the eye test though for some of these guys. On defense, Bryant kind of worries me because he doesn't really have a lot of lateral mobility.
Yeah.
I noticed a few times where a ball handle would dribble at him, and he kind of did like the short kind of like get to you steps, but didn't really get there and move anywhere. He was trying to stick with his guy and kind of like inch closer, and it didn't do anything.
Yeah, he would try to show a little bit, maybe give the ball handler's defender or one of, like, his teammate a chance to get back, but he tried not to leave his guy too much. There were some times where there was one moment in particular where he was defending a guard and the guard stepped back and he was just stumbling backwards and almost fell down.
So
mobility wise he's definitely not like Willie Cauley-Stein, but he played well at the rim defensively, which is a positive.
All right, so I think the most excited I saw you get besides like the ball Ingram lob was when Kyle Kuzma took a charge.
Yeah,
that's just my transition to Kyle Kuzma. That's all. That's my anecdote.
Shout out to Kyle Kuzma for promoting the podcast. Yeah, Kuzma, I was very excited. I live for those Chargers. It's a great play. He took it right in the chest, fell down, got back up. I was very excited about that. And he played well overall in the game. I thought he did a decent job. We definitely need to see him have more opportunities to really make a solid positive or negative impression. He's still like coming out of this game. I don't think I know much more about him than I did going in, and I'm still looking to see stuff from him. But the charge was great. He was 0 for 3 from 3. But I think he hit, was it a long two?
It must have been a long two. I thought he made a three, but he must have had a foot on the line. Yeah.
In transition, I think it was maybe Lonzo dribbling in and then kicking out to him. He hit a shot in rhythm, and it looked pretty good. He was 0-for-1 off the dribble, which I don't think is something you expect. I mean, you don't expect power forwards to take a lot of shots off the dribble, and he wasn't good at it in college, but if he could, he seemed comfortable with it, and if he can do that and be effective at it, that'd be cool. I think he needs to improve to get to that point, but we can monitor that as well. He was 3-for-3 in transition, ran pretty well, got to the rim, hit that shot in transition. So, yeah, he did a pretty good job. He did well defensively as well. He was switched on to the point guard a couple times, Kendall Marshall, especially in the third and fourth quarters, and didn't noticeably get burned. He was able to stay with him. And Kendall Marshall isn't Russell Westbrook or an explosive guard. But... yeah, Kendall Marshall's probably closer to me athletically than Russell Westbrook. But
the worst on the slowest point guard in summer league.
Yeah, nothing, no red flag there.
Right, right. Yeah. There was one kind of series of plays that really stood out to me with Kuzma. And for me, you know, I didn't watch a super lot of tape on him. I'm super raw on a lot of the college prospects. But he had a nose for the ball. I thought his activity and kind of willingness to get his nose dirty was really good.
Yeah.
He had a series of plays where I think he got a contested rebound and he just pivoted, looked up court really quick, threw it to Lonzo, and just had a great outlet, Siri, contested rebound, super, ready to get moving and get the ball up the court. And I think that's how the Lakers are going to want to play next year.
Yeah.
Which that series, I don't know if it led to points, but it made me feel good about his prospects as working within the system.
Mm-hmm.
Not much else there. We kind of briefly talked a little bit about Josh Hart before we went out to go see the games. Is there anything you saw from him tonight in the data or through the eye test that changed your opinion on him?
Not too much. He had a nice turnaround jumper after a jump stop earlier in the game. He had a nice and one finish at the rim. Defensively, he didn't really face too many situations. Opponents were 1-for-2 against him as the primary defender. I did see him twice get kind of lost as the off-ball defender, being a step or two away from his man, farther away than he should have been, but that wasn't really taken advantage of, so it didn't really stand out too much. But just looking back at the film, I noticed that he closed out better in the limited number of times that we got to see him close out. There weren't those crazy closeouts like we saw in Villanova, but again, not a large number of situations, so we'll continue to monitor that. Offensively, he took one half-court heave he missed, which we can ignore, but then he had five really ugly, ugly missed jump shots. One was off the backboard, and the rest of them were off the rim, very, very far, left to right, which isn't the way you want to be missing shots. And I think a lot of that had to do with so many of them being him kind of dribbling, turning, fading a little bit, taking the shot, fading a little to the side off of one leg, and it seemed to be forcing his shots.
Yeah. I saw Pete tweeted that out, and I really recognized that as well. He was really forcing stuff and didn't really let the game come to him in any way.
Yeah. So I think that's not accurate. That doesn't accurately reflect his real, true shooting ability. I guess we have a little bit of insight as to how well he can shoot kind of turning. But just as a catch and shoot guy, he's pretty strong, and he was strong in college. So I'm still high on his offense. Still not sure about the defense, but did an okay job today. Nothing that would lead me to believe that any of them should really have any sort of rotation spot on the team. I think Vanderbilt wasn't really looking to pass. He was missing some shots at the rim. He was taking plenty of shots. Caruso seemed to be fouled a lot. I think it was the third quarter, he drew a ton of fouls. So I guess that's good. He was hitting some free throws. But nothing really notable, I think, for that group of guys. But I think of the core guys, we saw some okay things. I'm looking forward to tomorrow's game and to see more opportunities of these guys. It was certainly fun.
Yeah, it was a fun game. The energy was electric. There's some silly, there's like a row of LeVar Ball fathead, like with different expressions. This is the kind of stuff you see at Summer League. Literally the entire crowd stood up when the Lakers walked in, and everyone's looking at LeVar and come in, LaMelo and LiAngelo and Lonzo and the rest of the Lakers. It was just weird. Like everyone's standing up and
it was really
nothing
weird.
Happened.
I've never seen I've never heard a crowd louder like 3 minutes into the game for like an uncontested layup to go in.
Right.
I think like Ingram hit like a layup and the place went nuts.
Well, the Lonzo Ingram lob, it was just, oh my goodness.
Was crazy. Yeah, that was fantastic. But yeah, it was really cool atmosphere. You said this earlier though, I think the best ball today was LaMelo. It wasn't Lonzo. In between, like during like a TV timeout or something, they had LaMelo go out there and do a shooting competition with, what's his name?
Clipper Darryl.
Yeah.
Clipper Darryl in his red and blue suit and all.
Yeah, so they got points for, like, layups or mid-range shots or threes or whatever, and LaMelo beat him, like, 11-5
He was the best ball on the court.
Yeah, he's out there, high school kid out there just hitting NBA threes with ease, so...
His jumper's funky too, man. But anyway, that's for the 2019 NBA draft preview. So, yeah, that was the first day of Summer League. We're going to go watch the Lakers and the Celtics game tomorrow, and we'll come back and tell you more about
that. First sold-out day in Summer League.
Crazy. It's so much Laker hype, and I love it. Hopefully they'll bring out or it out to L.A. sometime so we don't have to drive 5 hours to get out here and you don't have to fly halfway across the country. But, you know, it was fun, man. It was a lot of great energy. Had a real good time. So... kind of want to transition. We haven't spoken since free agency began. Not like it matters because the Lakers have done nothing.
Yeah.
Or less than
they've
nothing.
They've helped us out in that way. They've taken their time, given us a chance. So
they have. And
expect the moves to come right after this podcast.
And I believe Mark Medina tonight reported that it's still quiet. There's no imminent moves. They're still seeing the lay of the land. Although there was a report that they'd be willing, Woj on ESPN said that they'd be willing to give KCP a big 1 year and then extend him further. You know, that's speculation. Maybe they're just trying to play hardball.
That sounded more like speculative than my source says the Lakers are interested.
Right.
The way I read it.
Right. But there are plenty of other free agents that Laker fans do not want. And I figure we should talk about them, starting with Rajon Rondo, former Celtic, former champion of your favorite franchise. Excuse me, second favorite franchise. Sorry, Tim's a closet Brad Stevens head. So
Brad Stevens is the man, and
yeah.
I played and I won today.
Yeah, we'll see.
84-77.
I'll get you a best
the
out of
Boston
seven.
The Boston Celtics were victorious.
Well,
three leading scorers were Kelly Olynyk, Jonas Derebko,
all right,
and
let's
Al
move
Horford.
It on. Let's lay yeah, exactly.
Isaiah Thomas
let's
took
move
two
us.
Shots.
Bad podcast. All right,
Tommy.
Let's go. Rajon Rondo. Well, how bad is he?
He's bad. Let's talk about it. So I put together this points over expectation metric, which looks at for the shots that Rondo took every game. If an average player were to take those shots, how many points is Rondo scoring more than an average player would or below what an average player would? And then the same thing for defense. For the shots he faces as the primary defender, so it doesn't count as much of like the help defense stuff, but is the guy shooting as the primary defender, how well is he doing on the shots he takes and faces compared to what an average player would do? And if you line up the, like I think I have like 470-something NBA players, Rondo is in the third percentile, which means that only 97% of the league performed better with the shots they took and faced than Rondo did.
So I just want to get into that the CPOE you were talking about, because I just want to say it another way if it's easier to understand. Basically what it is there's an average expected amount of points from different shots around the court, correct?
Yep.
So the number that you're accumulating is the difference between the mean. Is that the right one? Mean? I'm not good at this.
Yeah.
Or mean.
Yes.
The difference between the average. So it's either going to be plus or minus. You're either slightly above average or more above average or slightly below average.
So like if an average player were to take the same shots Rondo takes, we would expect them to score 9.6 points per game.
And how many did Rondo score?
7.8. So he's down 1.8 on offense.
It's not great.
And then defensively, it was he would have been expected to concede 8.24. He conceded 8.3, so that's negligible, pretty much a zero, like pretty much dead average defensively. But that negative, very, very strong negative on offense brings him down to be 456th of the 471 NBA players I have.
So he'd fit right in with the Lakers then. Maybe we should sign him.
Yeah, so that's not good. And then if we break it down and look at some specific, more granular data, he was in the 17th percentile driving, so he's only better than 17% of the league. 20th percentile on his floater, 13th percentile off the dribble, 18th percentile mid-range, 22nd percentile in ISO, 0th percentile cutting. Nobody cut worse than Rondo.
Literally no one?
No one at all. He was in the 7th percentile overall offensively by points per possession. 20th percentile in the pick and roll, although he was in the 49th percentile passing out of that and creating for others. So he can create about average, but 20th percentile scoring in the pick and roll. The only positive, and I will try to make the best argument I can for why we should sign Rajon Rondo, is he was in the 68th percentile spotting up, which was his only strong point. He shot 38% from three. 72nd percentile, so he can stand there, he can catch, he can shoot. He only shot 17% from three off the dribble, but 39% catching and shooting, so he can kind of pass to people if we put him in the pick and roll, and he overall was a good passer, and we can just kind of sit him in a corner and let him catch and shoot, and he wouldn't be awful. He was in the 77th percentile unguarded, catching and shooting, 44th percentile when guarded, so yeah, I mean, that's not convincing. We should not sign him.
If he's open, he's not as bad of a shooter as when he came into the league. You know, he's developed that jumper a little bit more than people give him credit for. It's still not great, but it's manageable. But when he's doing all those other things, far below average, it doesn't make any sense. And, you know, screw Rondo.
Yeah.
Anything else? No. Hard pass. How about a guy I know you had your eye on that Lakers haven't really been tied to officially, but I think smart Laker fans are thinking about CJ Miles, signing him to a 1-year deal.
Yeah, I really like Miles. So Rondo was in the 3rd percentile with points over expectation. Miles was in the 92nd percentile. So he was scoring 1.5 points per game more than an average player would if they took the same shots as him. He was a slight positive defensively, but still just about even. So that would be great. He adds shooting to the team, which is something we desperately need based on that 6-for-40 today jump shooting. We lost Nick Young. We lost Lou Williams. So we lost some shooters from last year. This would be a guy we can throw in there that can help space the floor.
Man, no D'Angelo mention? Sorry.
I tried to block that out. No, CJ's a good player. He would fill that void. 97th percentile overall offense and points per possession. 90th percentile spotting up. He was great catching and shooting. He did a good job driving as well. 85th percentile. He was much better, I will note, standing still catching and shooting than pulling up or running off of a screen. He was only in the 40th percentile off of screens, which is still good. He shot 50% from three when he was open, catching and shooting, which I think is notable. He was 37% from three when he was guarded. So those are both pretty good numbers. That's a really big asset to add to this team.
Yeah, I like Miles. I've liked Miles for a long time. He's a easy fantasy draft pick for me. But the thing I'm kind of reserved about signing Miles is he doesn't bring a whole lot of playmaking. And I think that is important, because if you sign CJ Miles, I think he's going to play next to Lonzo quite a bit, or at least some. You know, I think Lonzo needs as many playmakers as possible. Yeah, like obviously that high efficiency spot up shooting for 1 year deal. I won't be mad if they sign him. That's my hesitation to giving him giving him a moderate, you know, multi-year deal. That's just my reservation on CJ Miles, but I do like him a lot, and I think that shooting is just so desperately needed by the Lakers that getting him for 1 year is a no-brainer.
Yeah, I think it's a fair criticism about the playmaking, but compared to some of the other guys that we could end up signing, I'd rather have an elite shooter who maybe can't pass as well, rather than someone who can't do either or can't shoot at all but can pass really
well. One strong, very strong strength.
Yeah, if I'm picking one of the two, I'd rather have the shooting.
Sure. Especially for this roster, man. So we got Brook Lopez as our best three-point shooter, like, officially right now.
Yeah.
So moving on to other guys that the Lakers are rumored to be talking about. Rodney Stuckey?
Not a fan. So Stuckey, 19th percentile points over expectation. He was a negative on offense, small negative defensively. If we look at his synergy data, he's in the 33rd percentile spotting up. He was really good in ISO, 77th percentile. He was above average in the pick and roll, 55th percentile, and did well creating for others in the 86th percentile. But 23rd percentile jump shooting, 17th percentile driving, 13th percentile catching and shooting, 40th percentile off the dribble. He shot 31% from three, which is below average. He ran off of five screens all season and was 0-for-4, drew shooting fouls. So he adds some ISO offense. He doesn't really add great jump shooting or driving, which are two kind of key things. Not a great spot-up shooter, not a guy we're going to be running off of screens that'll be the most efficient. That three-point percentage doesn't help us out a ton. Defensively, he was okay, 54th percentile, which is above average. He was pretty weak chasing guys off of screens in the 10th percentile, but 83rd percentile spotting up defensively. He was 51st percentile defending the pick and roll and was average among Indiana's guards at that, and he did a good job defending guard drives in the 86th percentile. So there are some positives, there are some negatives. Overall, I don't think ISO is a strong point and shooting as a weak point is the ideal fit for this roster. What are your thoughts?
I mean, to me, he's just, it's like an older Jordan Clarkson. I can't get that out of my head, the way he plays. You know, he's not a great playmaker, not a super willing passer. He's not, you know, he's not complete blinders at all times, but that guy, he's going to be out of the league in like 2 years, I think, you know. I don't know. I'm pretty low on Rodney Stuckey. I don't think it would be a great signing for the Lakers, even if it were a 1 year deal. I would have rather had Ben McLemore for two for 11. You know, he's a young dude, got athleticism, you know, decent jump, 3-point shot. You can say what you will about him. He's having a low ceiling, but you know, to me, it's just foolish to look at a guy like Rodney Stuckey for a 1 year deal and not look at like a Ben McLemore for 2-for-11 just to have an extra $4 or $5 million in cap space in 2018. That's just roster building to me is where this front office is kind of valuing the wrong things. So I purposely kept this moving along pretty quickly because I carved out some space for you and your boy, Mr. Ian Clark. Break it down for us, buddy. Yeah. Tell us about Ian Clark.
I'd be very happy to. So Ian Clark, for his points over expectation, he was in the 86th percentile. He was a positive on both ends of the floor. He didn't have like a ton of looks, but he had a good impact overall, and he converted when he had chances, played good defense when he was out there. I think really the big question for Clark is he a system player? We may hear that thrown around. What does that really mean? Like, what is happening right now in Golden State that if you take him from there and plop him in LA won't be happening and would therefore make him play worse? And like, is he going to shoot worse when on wide open shots in Los Angeles compared to wide open shots in Golden State? Probably not. Is he going to shoot worse on shots with a hand in his face in one place versus another? Also probably not. It's more about the breakdown of how often he's open, which is something that in Golden State, he was open pretty often. 64% of his 64 out of 100 catch and shoot shots for him were open. So that's a really high percentage.
Right.
He was getting a lot of open shots. So for most guys, they shoot better wide open. And if you were to put him in a bad spot where that split is more 50-50 or 45-55, they would logically shoot a lot worse because they're harder shots.
Yeah.
But Clark is a guy that did a good job shooting in both kinds of situations. So if we look at the Lakers overall as a team, 51% of their shots were contested. So that'd be for him going down from 64 to 51%, which would be a significant change. But on open threes, he shot 41%, which is good. For reference, Curry shot 46%. Clay shot 43%. D'Angelo last year shot 41. Clarkson 47, which is incredible. Swaggy P 41. Ingram 37. And Lou 46. So he's going to, if on those open threes, when he gets those shots, he's going to shoot about as well as like D'Lo or Swaggy P did last year, which is good. But then the key part with him is on those, how well he's going to shoot on those contested shots. Because if he's going to shoot a lot worse on that and you bring him over to LA, his efficiency is going to plummet. And that's where you say, oh, this was a system guy. He can't translate. He can't shoot when he's not just taking shots wide open. But he's not that guy. He shot 41.2% with a hand in his face, which is pretty solid. That's compared to 38% from Steph Curry, 38% from Klay Thompson. So he shot, I mean, it was obviously a lower number of shots than both of those guys, but he shot better on harder shots than two of the top like five shooters in the league. And we compare that 41% with D'Angelo shooting 30%, Clarkson 32%, Swaggy P shot 40%. The dude's amazing at shooting. Ingram 31% on contested threes, and Lou Williams 37%. So if he shoots just as well in those same situations in LA, he's going to be shooting a little bit better than Swaggy P and Lou Williams on those contested threes, which would just be a great thing to have on this roster.
Yeah, man, that's a fascinating kind of look into what I think the argument of whether or not Lou Williams is a system player, or excuse me, Lou Williams, Ian Clark is a system player, is a valid one, right? We don't know. But the way you break that down into saying that an open shot is an open shot in Oakland or in Los Angeles or in Timbuktu, right?
Yeah.
Like an open shot is an open shot. Those numbers might not stay static because numbers don't work like that. You know, he might go up, he might go down, but that's kind of where he's been at.
Yeah. And throughout his career, he's floated right around those ranges.
Right. Exactly. It's like a margin of error.
Yeah.
With shooting.
So like when he was playing on the Jazz summer league team, or like the Jazz D League team, he was shooting those around those same percentages, only he was in a worse offense, so he wasn't getting as many great looks, so his efficiency wasn't as good. But yeah. Now,
if we do sign Ian Clark, we'll effectively have traded Swaggy for Ian Clark, and I think it's a fascinating kind of experiment to see what those guys look like in those different systems. You know, obviously the Lakers and the Warriors will have slightly different rosters than they did the last season, but to see the difference between Nick Young's percentages with the Lakers this year versus his percentages with the Warriors next year is kind of an interesting look, and to see if Swaggy shoots better with the Warriors, gets more open shots, his percentages go up, or vice versa with Ian Clark, if they go up or down. It's a nice kind of one-to-one that you don't get in the NBA very often.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I think Clark's efficiency will drop a little bit in LA. I think that's going to happen. But I think even if he does drop, it won't be a substantial dropping from like the, I think it was the 75th or 76th percentile offensively to like the 30th percentile or something like that. If he drops from 75 to 65, he's the most efficient player on our team next year, potentially. Or hopefully not, but he would have been one of the top guys last season.
So how much would you pay the man, sir?
I don't know. I mean, I would throw, I guess if I'd throw whatever, I shouldn't say that. I'd give him 1 year.
You wouldn't give him 17, though.
Wouldn't give him $17 million.
Okay.
I'd give him, I think, like, I guess it really depends on 10? What the market asks. I'd give him 10.
Yeah. Just call it a day?
Yeah.
What's the harm, right?
Yeah. I mean, if he's the guy, if CJ Miles is off the board and we're looking between Ian Clark and Rondo or Ian Clark and Rodney Stuckey, like, I'll pay Ian Clark $15 million for a year and see what he brings. Yeah, I'd love to get him on like a 1+1 where if he plays well, he can play himself into a contract potentially maybe next year with a team option. Yeah. Go for something like that.
The only thing about a one-year deal, and back to what we said about him being a system player, it's one of these make-good contracts, right? One of these guys who's going to sign a one-year deal to prove, like, I can do this somewhere else. Like, this is legitimate.
That's a good point.
So
team option probably wouldn't be what he's looking for.
Even a player option, like, he might be more interested in the player option, like a 2-for-20, which I don't think the Lakers would do. But, you know, just a 1-for-10, I think, is reasonable for both sides, and the market's drying up real quick, man.
Yeah.
At the same time, like, would you rather have, you know, Tim Hardaway for $18 million a season for 4 years, or Ian Clark for 17 even for one season?
I'd rather have Ian Clark. Yeah. And he's not just a shooter. This guy can do more than just catch and shoot. He wasn't great on pull-up threes, but he was fantastic on pull-up twos. He shot 46.4% on pull-up twos, which is better than Steph Curry or Klay Thompson. And he's not just a jump shooter. He can drive as well. If we look at his ratio of jump shots to drives, he has a 2-to-1 ratio of jumpers to drives, which is lower than Klay, Curry, obviously, KD, Iguodala, and McCall. So he was getting to the rim more than all those guys. And when he did get to the rim, he finished in the 78th percentile, which is as good as Steph Curry, James Harden, and Chris Paul. So he can score at those levels. He isn't just catching and shooting. He can shoot off the dribble. He had a 1-to-1 ratio of shots off the dribble and catch and shoot shots, which is better than Iguodala's 3.5-to-1 ratio, like strongly catch and shoot,
right,
and pull up. McCall was 4-to-1. So
wow.
Clark isn't just going to stand there and you close out on him and he's out of the game. Like, he can dribble past you, pull up from two, and hit that shot.
Right.
And he can finish at the rim, and he can hit those three. So those are three things that I think he can score at all three levels, and that's definitely something this team needs. If one thing that Darius brought up in the Laker Film Room podcast, I mean, the last one a week ago or two, is that he doesn't really run the pick and roll, and he doesn't. He ran only 23% of his possessions compared to 52%. On average for NBA point guards and 25% for average NBA shooting guard. So a little bit lower than a shooting guard normally would. But when he ran it, he was in the 55th percentile, which is good. And I think it's also important to understand that the Warriors offense doesn't run these much at all. They ran the pick and roll the least of any team in the league. The Lakers ran it twice as much as they did last season.
Yep.
So he didn't run it a lot, but I think he can. And throughout his career, he's been okay at it. About average to a little bit above average. So I think he can do a good job out of Golden State. And if we're just looking at all the things we have, all the data, it's a guy that may be able to add some things on a one-year deal and also has some good defensive numbers as well. And his top style comps are Hardaway Jr., Bazemore, Ben McLemore, Gary Harris, and Avery Bradley. So this is a guy who plays a lot less than those guys, but he's playing a small role on one of the best teams ever. Top three team, top two team ever that we've ever seen, and he's efficient, and it may be able to carry over. So if his top comp is Tim Hardaway Jr., but we can get him for a lot less money or
right,
a much lower commitment, like, I'd be up for that.
And if he does come out and, you know, put up slightly diminished efficiency because the Lakers' offense isn't as good, and he's still within that margin of error of being that good. He's absolutely worth it and worth giving a look to extending beyond that. You know, if we can hopefully move Clarkson, I'd rather have Clark in that position. And I think we said that last time. I would so much rather have Clark.
Give me the Clark, father.
Drop the son. Just give me the Clark.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we look at, oh, he's just a role player. This guy's been better than any of Golden State's role players over the past, like, 5 years. Going back to 2012, 2013, if we take the top six guards for the Warriors for the past since 2012, 2013, that's 30 guys. He's 11th in efficiency, and the guys he's behind are Curry, Iguodala, Curry, Clay, Barnes, and Curry. So he's ahead of the Barbosas, he's ahead of the Livingstons, he's ahead of the McCaws, etc. There's one Iguodala year better than him, but he's been better. And he's had a high efficiency, and not every player that plays in Golden State is an efficient player. These guys were in the 40th, 50th, 60th percentile. So he's a good player, and I'd love to see him in LA if he had that chance. So So one thing that I think Laker fans may be pointing to as one reason why Clark may potentially join the Lakers would be playing for Luke Walton, his former coach, and playing in a system that's similar to Golden State's, which isn't something that I fully buy into. I think based on what we saw last year from the Lakers offense, it didn't resemble Golden State much at all. The actions were different. The complexity of plays was different. There were some similar, like, move the ball, have a good culture, but that doesn't make you the Golden State Warriors, and that's not what their offense. Like, every team should be passing the ball. We ran a lot more ISO than the Warriors did last year. We ran a crap ton more pick and roll. We ran twice as many pick and roll plays as they did last year. We don't run the same offense, and I'm very, very skeptical. I mean, I'm still open to it, but I'm very skeptical that Luke Walton is going to implement a Golden State Warriors style of offense on this team. And if we're going to be running more of the same stuff we did last year, I don't think that's as attractive to Ian Clark as playing on another team that may be running a more modernized style of basketball and give him the best opportunity to play well, whether it's on a one-year deal or longer term.
Yeah, I think the whole assumption that Walton's going to play like a Warrior style is just like lazy logic. You know, it's just the simple lazy logic. That's nothing more than that. But, you know, like we said before, the market for Clark is running out. I think a lot of these teams, I think maybe around half the teams in the league are like, all right, we're done.
Yeah.
For right now.
Yep. A lot of teams are done.
And then
every time there's another signing and it's not the Lakers and it's not Ian Clark, I, on the inside, am a little happy because that means there's a greater chance he'll end up in LA.
It's like musical chairs, right?
Yeah.
There's like few, it's the closer you get to that final three or four, the more likely you are to get that the guy that doesn't have any other choices.
Yeah. He's going to end up on a team. We'll just have to see.
He will end up on a team, Tim. Thank you for that analysis.
Yeah, I mean, there aren't too many players out there who, in their fourth year in the league, have the same efficiency as Steph Curry in his fourth year in the league. I'm just saying.
All right, man. Your Ian Clark card is showing. So I just want to quickly close this out. There have been a lot of rumors, reports that the Lakers are interested in Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. What do you think about KCP, man? Like, what is the data show about KCP, and is he as good as people are making him out to be, this max contract eligible guy?
I haven't watched a ton of film on him. I haven't really watched much film at all, and I don't watch Detroit Piston basketball much. But just looking at the data, he doesn't stand out as a guy I'd want to be paying a lot of money or much money or any money.
Wow, so which data?
I mean, okay, yeah. I'd take, like, I don't like him as much as some of these other options. I like him better than Stuckey, but I don't like him as much as, like, I wouldn't take Rondo over him, but I almost would, is how bad KCP's data is or how much I'm not buying into it as much. He was in the 38th percentile in POE. Per game, he scored 0.4 points more than expected, and he was 0.8 points worse defensively than expected. Overall, in his overall defensive rating, which incorporates things like defensive real plus minus, and Steve Shea, who's a statistician, PhD statistician, who does some basketball work, has an interior defensive rating and a perimeter defensive rating. And when you combine those with his weighted, of course, with his DRPM and his point in his defensive points over expectation, he was in the 22nd percentile of players. So, doesn't, like, defensively, I'm not sure I buy that he's great. He was in the 20th percentile defending drives, 26th percentile defending off the dribble shots, 10th percentile ISO, 39th percentile defending off screens, 35th spot up. He was Detroit's best pick and roll defender of their guards. So maybe he's decent there, despite his, he was in the 42nd percentile defensively in the pick and roll, but just looking at relative to the rest of his team, he was their best guy. So that has some upside there. But offensively, it doesn't make up for the defense. 14th percentile jump driving, 54th percentile jump shooting is above average. He shot 28% from three off the dribble, 37% catching and shooting, 44th percentile off the dribble overall, 67th percentile catching and shooting. So some highs, not highs and lows, but some pros and cons there. But I don't know. He's 24. He'll probably get better. But I'm not buying the defense, and the offense isn't as much of a positive as I see CJ Miles or maybe even Ian Clark. I'd rather have those two guys than KCP.
I hear you with all that stuff. One thing that makes me intrigued by him is that I think that two position is, we're so desperate for any kind of legitimacy there. You know, we're going to be shuffling through Clarkson, Nwaba, Josh Hart. Hopefully Josh Hart, you know, can ball a little bit. But I think they're just so desperate to find somebody next to Lonzo. I don't think KCP is probably the guy, like the most ideal guy to put next to Lonzo on a long-term basis, right? Yeah. You know, he's a kind of a theoretical two-way player. He shot, like you said, slightly above average. It's not like he's a full-on 3-and-D kind of can guard some twos and three, you know, 1-3 kind of guy. I can't, like, beggars can't be choosers at this point. Like, if we want to shoot our load on Paul George and LeBron or Westbrook, I think KCP is kind of one of those guys that can be a glue guy in the best case scenario. Now, you don't want to pay that dude a max contract, but I think he's the kind of guy that can kind of do the dirty work that needs to be done for role players. You're looking at me funny. What did I say?
I mean, if our selling point for him is he's going to do the dirty work and
don't tell him that.
Not that he's going to score or play great defense, then I don't know. And I'd rather have a shooter, and that's something that Clark and Miles bring, and that's something where KCP is kind of iffy with.
That's fair.
So, yeah. And it would be also fantastic to have, like, CJ Miles, first-team shooting guard, and then Josh Hart, second-team shooting guard, and have similar types of players that bring similar things to the offense, which would enable us to have consistency game to game, throughout the game, through injuries, on the types of sets and style of play that we run, which isn't something that we saw last year with a second unit playing very differently from the top unit. And then when guys got injured, Luke tried to kind of fill those starting holes with, like, Marcelo Huertas and guys just for the purpose of keeping the second unit together just because of the style of play was so different.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I think we'll see less of that this year.
Mm-hmm.
I hope.
I hope so. Yeah. But so if I had to rank these guys, I'd go Miles, Clark.
What?
KCP, Rondo. Rondo, KCP. Stucky.
Pause. Did you put Miles over Clark? Really?
I did.
Is this based on, like, value or how likely you think they are to sign or what?
How likely I am of ridicule? No. No, I think, like, CJ Miles is just an elite shooter. I think they're both good shooters. I think CJ Miles, if we're just looking at where I think they are and the variance and, like, the margin of error, I believe it's smaller for Miles, and we kind of know a little bit more of what he is compared to Clark shooting less opportunities this past season. So I think Miles is a safer option. It doesn't hurt to have a guy who shot 50% on open threes. But, yeah, I'd take Ian Clark in a heartbeat, and I'd have more fun with it.
And then you are showing your Boston love here, where you're like, Rondo over KCP, bro?
No, I'd probably take KCP first.
All right. That's good enough. I'll allow it.
It's not. It's close.
All right. Any closing thoughts, man?
No, I'm excited. So, yes. No, but then I'm going to give some. I'm excited to see the rest of Summer League. I left today pretty disappointed. It was really fun in the beginning, and after the ball to Ingram alley-oop dunk, it kind of went a little bit downhill, or it went a lot downhill from there. I'd love to see the team play well tomorrow against Boston and then play well again on Sunday. So, yeah.
They play on Monday.
Monday. Whatever day they play. I hope
all
they play
the days.
Well.
All the days they play.
Every day.
All right, Tim, last week we talked about Josh Hart and how we tabled his conversation on him joining the Lakers. You've done some digging into Josh Hart's film and his synergy stats. What stood out to you? You were kind of disappointed by the pick. Has the film and the data changed your mind?
I would say that so far it hasn't. I've taken a look at, like you said, both the numbers and then also some film. One thing that I wanted to test was maybe the reason his defensive numbers aren't so great is because he's on a day-to-day basis guarding the best player for opposing teams, which should certainly have some sort of impact. Keep in mind, though, that like the best players for like DePaul, Georgetown, Marquette, St. John's aren't exactly NBA caliber players every day, but that should impact him to some degree. So what I wanted to do is take a look and see if he were such a great defender, they should perform worse against him than what they did for the rest of the season against just any random Big East defender. So I looked at by play type, how many points they would be expected to score in post-ups or isolation or the pick and roll, and compare that to how many points they scored against him. And I did this for each player, their individual season averages. And based on that, over the course of the season, I looked at 19 players that he defended most often. So anyone who had four or more possessions against him, so it was 107 possessions, 19 guys. Those 19 guys scored 97 points more when Josh Hart was defending them than they would have on the season just against an average defender.
Do you feel comfortable with that sample size, like being so determinant?
I think that, I mean, it's definitely not every single shot he faced over the course of the season, but if so this is 107 possessions. He probably on the year only had maybe like 300 total defensively. So that's a significant chunk of his defense. And if it were to be true that he's a great defender, we would think that it at least wouldn't be 97 points in the wrong direction for him.
Sure.
So I took a look at that and that wasn't great for him. I wanted to back that up by film and see maybe this is a scheme thing. Villanova does some things defensively that a lot of teams don't do as frequently, such as they switch a lot. They do a 1-2-2 full court press a lot. It's not, most of the time it's not a super aggressive press. It's just to slow down the offense and burn some clock. But maybe transitioning back into man-to-man defense impacted his numbers. But from taking a look at the two areas that he defended most, which were spot ups and the pick and roll, I would say that it didn't bode well for him also.
Now, the spot-ups you mentioned, you tweeted out last week a lot of images of kind of where he was closing out, how he was closing out with really poor angles, and just kind of like he would close out and fall down in like three different images you posted.
Yeah, he was on the ground a lot. He was doing his best Roy Hibbert impression. Instead of like on a good closeout, you want to close out, chop your feet, be able to be in a decent position to move laterally. If the player decides not to shoot, put a hand up, contest the shot, but then be able to move if you need to. Whereas Hart was sprinting as fast as he could, not at the guy, but just to the left or just to the right of the player, and taking a leaping contest, like wild just contest, his arms flying out, trying to deter shots and get them to shoot worse by contesting. But what this did was if they didn't shoot, he was, and you saw in the pictures, he was in a position where he was like on the ground or like falling over himself, trying to change direction just because he wasn't under control closing out. And that's not great. That gave up a lot of open threes if they just pump faked, let him run by and then took the shot, or a lot of easy shots towards the rim, or forcing the defense to help and then kicking it out for a good shot for a teammate or getting some open pull up. So that's not great. One thing that Pete brought up was maybe that this was a scheme thing that Villanova was trying to do to try to deter teams from taking threes, like chase them off the three-point line, get them to take long
hard
shoes.
Hard closeouts.
Yeah, and this is definitely something that teams do, and it can be effective. So I wanted to test that hypothesis because it makes a lot of sense. And it just saying that, I was like, oh yeah, that's I'm hoping that's what it is. That would explain a lot. But when I took a look at the other top guards for Villanova, I looked at, I believe, three of their, or I looked at every guard that plays in their like seven man rotation. And among those players, I took a look at like, I think 35 possessions for each. And of those 35, among the four players, only like one or two or three of those were wild closeouts. So this isn't something that was consistently done at Villanova, which makes me think it's more of a Hart thing and something he needs to adjust with than scheme explaining it.
So do you think that in the case of his closeouts, that's one of the more coachable, fixable things on the defensive side? It seems like it's not like rocket science, right? It's closing out properly, not closing out too hard, still giving yourself some room to back up and you know, trail a guy if he's going to close out on you. Do you think that's one of the more coachable, fixable things about defense?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's there was nothing that I saw that would say that would lead me to believe that he can't be good at this. He was in the 45th percentile overall, so he wasn't horrendous. And a lot of the things that we want him to, or I mean, all of the things we want him to fix are technique things and things that with good coaching, he can improve upon. One kind of hesitation I have is his coach in, at school at Villanova was Jay Wright, who is an excellent coach and is really good with fundamentals. And a lot of the film I watched on his teammates were, it was excellent and they did a good job. So if Jay Wright can't get through to Josh Hart, will Luke Walton, will his staff be able to get through to Josh Hart?
Jay Wright with 4 years of Josh Hart.
Exactly. Yeah. This isn't a one and done hot shot. I'm not going to play defense player. This is a guy who led this team and was a emotional and on court leader through 4 years on a team that's great defensively. I believe they're in the 92nd percentile against man defense. And a lot of his teammates were excellent, but Hart stood out in all these categories as being someone who wasn't on that level defensively. And when I looked at the film, that matched up with that. But yeah, to answer your question, this is something he can work on. This should definitely be able to be improved and isn't something that long-term should be an issue. Another thing I did notice with that is there were a lot of times where he landed very, very close to the offensive player and almost fouled them. There were, I think, six times where he did foul them and it wasn't called. So this is something that some of the more savvy NBA players will be able to kick their feet out in their sweep and sway off of their jump shot, fall down and get fouled shooting some threes. So he can adjust to that. I think once he gets taken advantage of with that a couple of times, it'll hit him and he'll fix that. But he wasn't great. He can be good. But that's what I saw from the spot up possessions.
So it sounds like, Laker fans, you're going to get ready to yell at Josh Hart for fouling a 3-point shooter for no reason. You know, in the first 10 games or so, if he gets significant playing time, you know, so be prepared for that. You know,
when we play the Rockets.
Yeah. Or the Clippers with Lou.
Clippers with Lou.
So I want to move on to some of the things I found interesting in some of his counting stats. I didn't realize he averaged 6.5 rebounds a game. And I know we kind of aren't account. I didn't look up how many rebounds the rest of Villanova guys averaged. But for a guy that plays his position, shoots 40% from three in college, two out of the 4 years, he shot 46% in 14-15. Rebound shooting threes, that's kind of an interesting duo to be strong at. Do you think, and I'm putting you on the spot here, do you think his rebounding can translate to the NBA in a way?
Potentially. What are his measurables? How big is he?
Man.
Is that on the page you're looking at?
Yeah. He is 6'5", 205.
Yeah. I think, like, that's not a bad frame to be able to grab some boards as a guard.
Is that switchability?
Yeah, he's got some switchability. He'll be able to guard the one or the two, potentially maybe the three. We'll have to see. How many of those rebounds were offensive as compared to defensive?
There were 6.5 total rebounds, 6.4 to be specific. Let me look.
And while you're looking that up, just rebounds are something that I like to hesitate with just for the raw numbers because we don't know how many of those his teammates deferred to him. We don't know what his percentage is on like contested rebounds, which is what I would really look for. Because potentially this is a scheme thing. You always had him dropping back. So there are a lot of factors going into that. Maybe he was getting blown by a lot and was chasing his guy back to the rim and giving up shots at the rim, and that's why he was there to grab him. So it's an interesting thing to look at. We'll see if it translates. I think he has the body to be able to get some rebounds and win those contested ones, but I wouldn't make too much of that on its own.
So he had 88 defensive rebounds and 29 offensive rebounds.
Okay, that's...
So about a fourth of his rebounds were offensive rebounds, which is pretty good. It's not bad for...
I think that's about normal.
Yeah. Do you have anything else that stood out to you, good or bad, in his some of his data?
Yeah, for the pick and roll. And this is something that scheme... If there were any parts of his game where Villanova's scheme were to impact it, I would assume it would be the pick and roll just because there's so many ways you can cover it. And it's not him defending his man. It's him and a teammate defending his man in the screener. And there are a lot of different ways to do it. And with synergy attributing blame to just one player or the other, there's some room for error or for team effects to have an impact on him. So also I'll note that with the spot up possessions, transitioning back from the press to man-to-man defense, there were only, I don't remember the number off the top of my head, but just one, two, or three out of like the 98 possessions where I thought scheme really played a role. in that respect. But so with the pick and roll, so you asked about the Data, and if we're just looking at scheme, he was much worse than all of his guard teammates at defending the pick and roll. He was in the 37th percentile. His teammates were 67th, 75th, 71st, and 78th. So he's 30 percentile points worse than the next worst Villanova defender in the pick and roll. And Villanova as a team was very good. So based off of that, I would kind of lean towards it's probably a him thing and not when he happened to be the guard defender, the big man that was helping him out just happened to do a bad job when it was him as opposed to his teammates.
But Tim, didn't he win co-defensive player of the year in the Big East?
He did.
How could he be a bad defender and win co-defensive player of the year?
Well, I mean, when you look at how the voting is done, these people voting don't really have the same numbers that we might be looking at. And when they look at Josh Hart, they see a leader on the best team in the conference who's scoring a lot of points a game, who every single day is taking on the other team's best player.
On a good defensive team.
On a good defensive team. So yeah, if the Lakers were a great defensive team and we knew that Lonzo Ball was taking on the other team's best player every single day and the team was great defensively, it would just, without looking through all the film, you'd say, okay, well, then he must be doing a good job. And I think that's part of why Hart... I think that's a big part of why Hart ended up winning, because the rest of his team was great. A lot of defense isn't in isolation where it's really easy to see, okay, he got beat or he didn't get beat. With the pick and roll, it's hard to tell how much worse he is than his teammates without really looking through the film a second time on replay or looking through the data. It's harder to see him not doing well, like chasing off of screens or different things. And a lot of that defense kind of goes under the radar. And I think that played a role in kind of this misvoting of him, in my opinion.
So we're just about to head out to go watch the Lakers in Summer League. We're going to come back and kind of talk about what we saw from him and the rest of the squad. Is there anything else you want to finish up, like, before you see Josh Hart in person?
Yeah, so a couple things I'll be looking for are, how are his closeouts? Is he closing out wildly? Is he closing out with good technique? That's something we can judge in the moment and see how he's doing. Another thing on the pick and roll, there were a lot of times where his footwork wasn't great. He was crossing his feet over instead of sliding, and that made it harder for him to defend when the opposing player switched directions. So seeing if he's on the ground at all, seeing how he's doing sliding his feet, seeing how he's doing exposing his high foot, which, so like if my left foot is much higher than my right foot, it's easier for the offensive player to attack that side and it's harder for me to recover. And that's something that he did a lot over the season. So just seeing how well he's doing those couple things. And that's something I'll look for. He looked decent in isolation and in film. So really those closeouts and his footwork in the pick and roll are the two things I'll look for, and we'll get back to you after the game.
Well, thank you for joining us. This is the Taking Charge podcast with Cranston Basketball. I am Tom Zayas. You can find me on Twitter at LFRTommy, and you can find Tim. You can search Cranston Basketball, or his handle is at T1M_NBA. We'll catch you next time.